On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, broadcasting today direct from New Orleans, where we're digging into the precarious state of this historic city a year and a half after Hurricane Katrina and its devastation. The city center and fabled French Quarter are cleaned up and wide open for business. But turn any corner in New Orleans and you can still come face to face with Katrina's brutal impact. Much of this city still isn't home, and many who are here fear the country has moved on. Up next on Point, direct from New Orleans on the mighty Mississippi, the state of a city, risen to its knees and wondering what's next. I have a terrific panel with me in the WWNO public radio studios in New Orleans, here on the shores of Lake Pontchartrain. Douglas Brinkley is professor of history at Tulane University and director of the Theodore Roosevelt Center for American Civilization. He's author of The Great Deluge, Hurricane Katrina, New Orleans, and the Mississippi Gulf Coast. Doug Brinkley, it's great to talk with you again.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
It's great to have you. And Lolis Eric Eli is here, a columnist for the New Orleans Times-Picayune. The newspaper won 2 Pulitzer Prizes for its Katrina coverage, and he has helped us stay up to date with the city ever since. Lolis Eric Eli, great to have you back. Thanks for being here.
Tom, my pleasure.
And with us from the Times-Picayune, Martha Carr, assistant city editor. She's covered Mayor Ray Nagin and all things New Orleans for a long time. Martha Carr, wonderful to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Tom.
Doug Brinkley, let me go straight to you here. I said in the very intro, the days I've been looking around New Orleans, the weather's been beautiful. The French Quarter looks great. Big festival down there over the weekend, and we saw it. But you turn the corner, and it looks like trouble sometimes. My sense is of this city risen up to its knees and just not sure which way it's going from there. Fair enough? How do you see it? What's the big descriptor?
It's fair enough. I would look at it a little differently. I think it is, as the cliche says, a tale of two cities. There's the New Orleans that was on high ground, above sea level New Orleans. Some people are calling it the sliver by the river, which is mainly the Bywater and the French Quarter, the Central Business District, Garden District, and Uptown. That's the traditional areas most tourists come to go see.
Sure.
And they're back. I mean, Commander's Palace is serving food, and Galatoire's back, and the Sheraton and Marriott's are filled with people. You could come down here and have a good time. If you go the areas that were really damaged from the breached levees, 17th Street, London, and Industrial Canal, meaning neighborhoods like Gentilly or the Lower Ninth or New Orleans East, it is an entirely different story. You're looking at a situation that doesn't seem much improved a year and a half or over a year and a half after Katrina. It still looks like a nuked-out zone, and your jaw just drops. I've come to the conclusion that because they're below sea level, the inaction going on in those communities is Bush administration policy. The policy of inaction is actually the policy.
Is the policy. Capital T, capital P. We'll talk about that. Lolis, what's your sense? Is this going to be the sliver by the river, or is it going to be a whole New Orleans?
Well, I think what Doug said is accurate, but what he didn't touch on is the determination of some people, even in the lower parts of the city, to come back. And it's both good and bad to see people where there may be 3 houses on a block that have come back, and then there won't be houses for another 2 or 3 blocks. And in the absence of clear policy from the federal or the local government, people have sort of made their own decisions. And the love for the city among its residents is incredible. And I don't mean that simply in a sentimental sense. I mean, it translates into people determined to come back into the house that they once lived, despite the fact that it might not be the wisest decision from a geographer's perspective.
Anybody who's ever touched it can understand the love for New Orleans, but in some sense it does boil down to numbers. Martha, what do the numbers look like? What portion of the city has come back? What is the population today compared to what it was?
The population, I think the most recent census take is that it's in the 230,000 range, which is about half of where we were pre-storm, which was around 455
or so. That's a huge whack.
It's a huge whack. I mean, the one thing that I think a lot of people in other parts of the country don't realize is that while the population in the city of New Orleans is down, the metropolitan region, which encompasses 7 parishes or counties in other parts of the country, as other people in other parts of the country would call it, is nearly a million people, which in total it's about a 300,000 person drop from where the region was pre-storm. If you look metro-wide. So it's important to consider that when people continue to talk about, is this a viable region to rebuild? I mean, absolutely, we have – it's larger than most American cities.
Of course, there's region and there's city, and the city is where the sort of storied culture is and where an awful lot of people lived. I'm looking at a poll in reported in your newspaper just yesterday or today perhaps, saying that a quarter of the people in that metro area are saying they plan to leave. They're headed out, and 47% the total say they're not hopeful about the future of the New Orleans region. What do you read in that, Martha?
Well, I think I think a lot of people, I mean, there are a couple of issues. One is ultimately where the economy of the city is going to go. I think there's not been a whole lot of appropriate discussion or planning or dialogue about, you know, where the jobs are going to come from. And New Orleans, as a city, was a very poor urban area before. Louisiana is the poorest state in the nation. I think a lot of people are concerned about the economic health of the city and their own family's economic health.
We were out on the streets in downtown New Orleans yesterday, caught up with a construction worker. Nate, 30 years old, has lived in New Orleans all his life. When we caught up with him, he was working in the Central Business District on a building that had burned down after Hurricane Katrina. He's from the Lower Ninth Ward, where that devastation, as you say, Doug Brinkley, is still so widespread. Here he is talking about his concern, construction workers' concern, about rising crime rates. We'll look at those, and what he called a lack of leadership.
The governor, you know what I'm saying, she's talking about crime rate and the mayor, you know, they're throwing it all on the mayor. I mean, it's everybody's fault in the city, you know what I'm saying? You can't just point no fingers at one person and say that, you know, it's your fault that the crime rate is like this, or it's your fault there's no housing. You know, I mean, it should be a unity thing. Everybody should be working together at one cause, you know, but I mean, that's not what's happening. Everybody's trying to layer their pockets right now, you know?
No one cause working, and you hear Nate there talking about the crime rate and no housing. Everybody's been looking at the crime rate just in the last couple of weeks. Lola, there's been a spike here, but it's been bad for a while now. What can you tell us about that crime rate? What's going on and why?
We're now looking at, on average, slightly more than two murders a day. And obviously, there's some days when there are none. There are other days when there are more.
In a city of only 230,000 people.
Exactly.
I mean, that's a rate that I think I read is something like four or five times other metro areas, St. Louis, Milwaukee, you name it.
Well, a lot has been destroyed by the flooding and the aftermath of the hurricane, and part of it is the criminal justice system and the police force. And there are a lot of different aspects of this, and no one has been able to say, well, exactly this is the problem and therefore this is the solution. But it's certainly... it's debilitating in the city's effort to recover.
Doug Brinkley, outside of New Orleans, I've spoken with a lot of people this week in the region. They just won't. They don't want to go in. They'll zip in on Highway 10 and go right down to the French Quarter for dinner. But you know, it's like, oh my gosh, New Orleans, big trouble. Watch out! Don't go.
Well, you're touching on two of the big issues: the housing shortage and the housing problem, and crime. Yesterday, I was a keynote speaker to the FBI. And I talked to them. Beyond me saying my thoughts, I listened to what they're up to. Yeah. They've come in here full force, the federal government. They're trying to run the New Orleans Police Department, which had rank corruption in it pre-Katrina. They failed during Katrina. Now the feds think they can make a difference. A lot of them are frustrated. They feel a little bit like Bush policy in Baghdad. They were going to come down here, clean it up, the murders would stop, and the FBI is recognizing that it's a deeper problem down here. We're dealing with the culture of corruption, we're dealing with failed schools, we're dealing with not enough police, and a problem with what they call public integrity. Do people trust the police after years of police being on the take and the like? So the federal government has a Herculean job ahead of them here. My students at Tulane, many of them, when I talk to them, hey, how's it going here, guys? Yeah. There are a lot of them from the East. They say, my parents don't want me coming back because of the crime rate. When we get two murders, and it's on our newspaper here, and CNN picks it up, there may be two murders that day in Chicago that aren't being reported, but they're being reported in New Orleans. So we've got to get a handle on the crime. We have no Fortune 500 companies down here except a bankrupt energy. They're none. There are 21 up in Minneapolis-St. Paul. We don't have private sector money. We have the port, and the port's back. It's back to its Katrina numbers, and we have tourism. We cannot afford to be the murder capital and expect all these big convention groups to be coming down here to have a good time when they think the place is unsafe. So I think getting a grip on this escalating crime problem is really our number one issue in this city.
I'm joined here in New Orleans by Lolis Eric Eli with the Times-Picayune, columnist there, and Martha Carr, assistant city editor at the Times-Picayune. Douglas Brinkley, professor of history at Tulane University, is with us as well, author of The Great Deluge. They've seen a lot firsthand. I want to talk about money and what's been delivered and what hasn't. Martha, where does that stand? We heard huge numbers bandied around in Washington, $100 billion plus. I don't know what's landed for New Orleans.
Yeah, actually, this is an interesting I'm glad you brought this up because this has been an interesting point of debate between the federal government and our state and local leaders. Essentially, our state leaders and recovery leaders estimate that of the $110 billion that the president claims has come to our region, only 59 billion of that has actually come to Louisiana, the rest to other hurricane-stricken states. Of that, $18 billion actually went out in typical disaster relief that would be extended to any community.
First responder, feed people, get a roof over their heads.
Exactly. Almost $15 billion of that went to flood insurance payouts, which, you know, people own policies and pay premium dollars for that.
Right.
So they estimate that about $26.4 billion of actual genuine help has been sent down to Louisiana for levees, for help with people rebuilding their homes.
And that's for the entire state.
Right, for the entire state. And, you know, the number they're saying we're still in need of is, you know, over $30 billion to this region.
Is that anywhere in the pipeline? Is it coming?
No, actually, you know, currently in Congress, in the emergency supplemental spending bill, there is $6 billion for levy work, for a waiver of a 10% match that the state is required to pay, for public rebuilding projects that FEMA is largely funding. However, the president has said, because that's tied to timelines for removal of Iraqi troops, troops from Iraq, that he will veto that that bill.
We got some voices here yesterday. We talked with Pastor Jeffrey Friend with Suburban Baptist Church in East New Orleans, Hopeview Baptist in St. Bernard Parish. His church in St. Bernard Parish took on something like 15 feet of water, totally submerged, under reconstruction. They moved back into the other church, had a dedicational service last Sunday. He was down at Cafe Reconcile, talked with us about his concerns of New Orleanians as they look ahead at another hurricane season. Let's listen.
They're going back into the storm season. No one wants to go back in hurricane season, still living in a trailer. They need some sense of security to be within the four walls of a home. You know how devastated the city was in houses. Nobody wants it. A hurricane one would be devastating in a trailer. Nobody wants to do this. That's why I think there'll be a great exodus of money coming in, or there's going to be a great exodus of people leaving out.
Bring the money in, or people are going to be headed out. Douglas Brinkley, what remains to be done? What are the actual infrastructure challenges still here?
Well, they're really endless. I mean, but first and foremost, we have to deal with this levee situation. You know, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is a venerable organization. You study them in history. But they really did us wrong here in the state of Louisiana. We are dealing with Lego levees. We're dealing with about 300 miles of levees that aren't secure. And we needed a massive public works project to make this a sustainable place to live. If the Dutch can save Den Haag and Amsterdam and Rotterdam from below sea level from the sea, and those are model world-class cities. Where Italy can save Venice, we can save New Orleans. It's our great cultural heritage center, not just for Louis Armstrong and Jelly Roll mm-hmm. Morton, but you could rattle off the names mm-hmm. of, you know, Faulkner and Truman Capote and on and on. The point is, we haven't had presidential leadership. We haven't had somebody say, you know what, we're going to make this the biggest public works project. Because it would have to, Dwight Eisenhower in the 1950s built the interstate highway system, which now is the sure. largest. We would need that kind of initiative here to have a levees system that can sustain a Category 5 storm. That wouldn't happen, even if the money came right now. It'd probably take to about 2015, somewhere in there, in order to make this safe. I think New Orleans is worth it. If we're not going to stand up and save our great ambassador city to the world, what does that say about this generation of Americans? I've given up on the Bush administration. I think we're basically living on a prayer, hurricane season right now. But hopefully the 2008 election will bring New Orleans back to the forefront when it's not just an occasional show, but it becomes a discussed whether this great country, which rebuilt Europe with the Marshall mm-hmm. Plan after World War II, wants to really take the rebuild of Louisiana, Mississippi seriously, and that will also mean replenishing the wetlands, which served as the great sponge and buffer for New Orleans when tropical storms and hurricanes came this way.
And there's the issue of whether it's going to be that kind of Disneyland of the city center, the sliver by the river, as you say, or really a whole and functioning city. We've got here some tape from a lifelong resident of New Orleans, Jerry Amato, down at Mother's Restaurant. He's the owner there. Just reopened 6 weeks after the hurricane hit. He's looking at the levees, looking at assistance from Washington, saying the real reason New Orleans is big stretches of it are gone today is because of the poor construction and engineering of the levee system in the first place.
You know, they've been cutting funds to levee projects since 1965 when they started them. So the problem of what happened in New Orleans is firmly on the federal government's hands. It's due to the federal government and the Corps of Engineers, and nobody wants to admit that this really is a liability case. And it's something that the federal government has to do to make New Orleans whole.
Lolas, this has been a big theme of yours. This is a liability case. Remind us of what actually happened here. We always say Hurricane Katrina, and the thought loop goes back, well, there was a giant hurricane that swamped the city. What can you do? But
well, what happened is that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers built a system of flood protection, including levees and flood walls. Flood walls are not quite as strong as levees, but the system together was supposed to be able to withstand a Category 3 hurricane. When the storm hit New Orleans, it was a weak Category 3 when it got to the city itself. These flood walls and levees did not hold. Now, some of them did, but long story short is the failure of this flood system is what flooded the city, not the devastation of the hurricane per se. What we have found, and our newspaper has been at the forefront of this research, is that the Army Corps of Engineers set standards for how these levees and flood walls needed to be constructed in order to withstand Category 3 hurricane force winds. They did not construct the levees to their own specifications.
And they have conceded that formally.
On the day of hurricane season began last year, June 1, the United States Army Corps of Engineers said that this is the first time they have had to take responsibility for, quote, a catastrophic failure. My concern is that we discuss New Orleans in a microcosm as if the question is whether or not the country will be charitable to one of its many great cities.
Mm-hmm.
In reality, though, New Orleans is best seen as a case study. The Corps of Engineers came out subsequently and said that there are projects in 27 states that are in danger, that are in need of repair.
Mm-hmm.
So my point is that the failure of the flood system in New Orleans is emblematic of what could happen anywhere else. So don't insist that the federal government take up its responsibility as a charitable issue
mm-hmm.
because you have people in New Orleans you love.
The next city could be your own.
Exactly.
And you don't, and it didn't work here. It was supposed to work here. It should have withstood a Category 2 hurricane.
Right. The other thing that I would add, though, is Louisiana is home to about 40% of the nation's coastal wetlands. We suffer about 80% of coastal wetland loss. The point is that we're losing tens of miles of American homeland territory every year.
Mm.
If there's any homeland we need to protect, this simply seems the most urgent one at the moment.
if it were troops coming ashore taking that land, we'd be all over it, you're saying.
Exactly, exactly.
I want to begin to turn to our callers. Mary Lou is calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Mary Lou, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My sister lives in New Orleans, and she stayed through the hurricane, evacuating several days after when the water was cut. And
yeah.
Before the roads leading out were cut off to her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She evacuated first to Atlanta, to our sister's house, and then to eventually wound up in Chicago. She has since returned, and it has been devastating to her. Her house was not one of those under the water. But the wind damage, the rain, the plaster all fell. She's had massive repairs. Insurance didn't begin to cover it.
So does she see New Orleans coming back, Mary Lou?
Yes and no. She's very frustrated. She is living in the Irish Channel. It has been an area of high drug use. She fought for 10 years to get the drug dealers out. She received death threats for that work. She couldn't go out of her house. And before the hurricane, she had finally reached a point that she could converse with her neighbors, that she could go outside and enjoy her home. And what she has found since she's come back is it's all gone. 10 years worth of work, 10 years worth of community improvement is gone. The corruption is as bad as it ever was. The police are, I won't say as unresponsive, but they're overwhelmed. And
there's your sister living right
fight.
In the middle of it. She's come back, and even with that she committed with her feet, and now we hear what she's up against. Martha Carr, this sort of teetering sense of New Orleans, the yes and no sense, seems to be the real problem here. How much does this city come back? Is it just an emblem that's left of what it was, or does a real city come back here? What do you feel in gear to bring that back, and what's missing?
Well, I mean, we have had a really hopeful move recently. Mayor Ray Nagin hired a recovery czar by the name of Ed Blakely, who, within 3 months of his hiring, proposed a plan to actually focus public dollars and public resources, $450 million on 17 target zones, which would grow up around some initial commercial development and actually attempt to begin to reinvest in certain parts of the city that he and his research has determined are viable.
But isn't this the third or fourth plan that's come out since the storm?
No, this is not.
Okay.
This is the first kind of publicly endorsed by government officials plan for rebuilding. There's been plenty of discussion. There's been a large planning process. But this is the very first plan to come out in which the government has said, we are going to put our tax dollars towards these areas of town.
I thought I heard you say that the city needs something like $26 billion. Here's $450 million. Does that cut it? Is this Mayor Ray Nagin's market forces program in a different guise?
Well, I mean, Mayor Ray Nagin has never said, and this plan certainly doesn't say, that they are going to close off any area of the city or give up on any area of the city. The $450 million plan is essentially looking at resources that they have in hand, money that they have in hand, and money that they think is reasonable to get. It is certainly not relying on the $30 billion that doesn't exist and is somewhere off in the air in a hope that we'll get from the federal government. So this is them stepping forward saying this is the money we have in hand, and these are the areas we think are best or most viable.
Kind of you fight the war with the troops you've got, in a sense. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Doug Brinkley, how do you see what's teetering here, the yes and no comeback? What's assured and what's in question?
Well, one, there are a lot of problems. One is, like the caller who's finding how frustrated a family member is here, a lot of the professional class people are leaving. Doctors, lawyers that aren't involved with civil suits, people that have advanced degrees, they're leaving. They're going to other places. You're losing a generation of people that say, look, I'm not going to raise my children in a city where there's no really decent schools, the health structure's crumbling.
Half the hospital still not back or something like that?
Exactly.
Scores of schools still missing.
But here's what bothers me the most. Mm-hmm. Let's just say there's 100, let's focus on 100,000 people of the diaspora that are in Texas right now. Right. And let's say they all want to come back. And let's say the lower Ninth Ward. The official policy now is come on back. Come on back to the lower Ninth. How do you come back to the lower Ninth Ward when you're not sure that the levees are safe in that neighborhood, when you've got no schools running, no postal, no electricity? It's disingenuous to say to come back. This idea that the flowers of New Orleans are going to spring where the private sector finds some good, which is really the Bush-Nagin view ultimately, I find it very suspect. I think you have to give a strong message one way or the other. I'm for rebuilding of the Lower Ninth. I think it's a historic neighborhood. I think we need to do it. I don't think it could be done locally. I think this problem is so large in scope that it's going to take presidential leadership of a kind that we don't have now. I am not saying the Democrats have been much more help in Congress. They've punted. They've looked away. They all have their own pork projects in their own state, and they've lost interest. But I honestly believe for New Orleans to come back, it's going to take a very large national referendum. And I agree with Lolas that one of the things is the infrastructure crumbling all over the country right now, which has to be addressed. But I live here, and I'd like to see this one addressed. I do care about the history of New Orleans. I think the architecture is unique. I can't imagine our country without this city. And everybody, you go around the country, loves New Orleans. College students are coming down here to help. Faith-based groups are coming to help. It seems everybody's on to helping save New Orleans except our government. And even yesterday when I was talking to the FBI agents, their real problem is dealing with FEMA fraud, because FEMA signed checks to people that shouldn't have gotten checks. Now the FBI, instead of looking after the bad guys, the drug dealers, is being pulled off to do all these fraud cases of the FBI. History will show Homeland Security, and particularly FEMA and the Bush administration, has been an utter failure for this disaster of this kind. And we, as Lolas also said, we cannot pretend the wetlands is just a green issue anymore.
I've been joined from the New Orleans Times-Picayune by Martha Carr and Lolas Eric Eli, both deep in the New Orleans story right there, and from Tulane University by historian Douglas Brinkley, author of The Great Deluge. We were out with our microphones yesterday and caught up with attorney Ted Alpo. He gave us his take on the big picture of the aftermath of Katrina and of what comes next.
Everybody thinks that this is old news. It's not. It's a continuing news story. It will be for the next 10 years at least. It's going to take a long, long time to put this together. And that's what happens when you have an engineering fail like what happened here in New Orleans. I mean, people have to understand that they may like hearing about it. They may think it's old news, but it's not. It's very immediate, and it's going to continue to stay that way.
Ted Alpo telling us yesterday, this is a story that's going to go on, Lolas, Eric Eli, for 10 years or more. Get used to it. It's not going to go away. Do you see that culture that everybody talks about? There's the population, and there's the infrastructure, there's the culture. Do you see that hanging on? Mayor Ray Nagin talked about the chocolate city, and that, of course, there was kind of a firestorm about that. And I don't know how you look at the cultural piece. Are the cultural piece and the racial balance in this city so tied up they can't be pulled apart? How do you see that, Lolas?
Well, much of what makes New Orleans culture distinct is the West African and Haitian influences here. So we talk about the importance of it remaining a city with a large black population. That is crucial to our identity. And even though people talk about the number of black folks who have not come back, it seems pretty clear to me that a whole lot have. Social aid and pleasure clubs are back and they're still parading. Unfortunately, a lot of their members may not live in town. Those members can travel here. They're still able to perform. The Mardi Gras Indians, not all of them are back. They came out for Carnival. If you go to clubs in the Faubourg Marigny and the French Quarter and other parts of the city, you can still hear great New Orleans music played by many, if not most, of the musicians who had been playing it a year ago. If you look at our architectural culture, much of it is in decent shape because the historic architecture was built in the higher parts, the older parts of the city.
French so that's Quarter a big and so on.
Exactly. Same with restaurants. Restaurants are having difficulty getting enough staff, but you can dine quite well here. And that, again, is not only a part of our face to the outside world, that's crucial to New Orleanians. So I'm not concerned about the culture of the city or the identity of New Orleans as such continuing. My concern, though, is that that heart of the city can remain in a very small part, but the reconstruction of the city beyond that area, beyond the French Quarter, the Faubourg Treme, the Faubourg Marigny, etc., that's crucial to our soul in a broader sense, because a lot of the people that we need to come back lived in those communities. And those who are back, there's only so long you can live in a house with 10 relatives. You know, these people need their own homes and need to have some faith that the city's moving forward.
Douglas Brinkley, do you see enough of that population coming back to sustain the culture as we've known it? Or is this a good show that New Orleans is putting on, you know, kind of trying to show that face? And of course, I've seen it in these last few days. You can be on beautiful spots and hear wonderful music and see, you know, people happy and going about the business. But look around the corner, and I see just apartment after apartment building. You can look straight through. So is it enough to sustain?
Well, only time will tell. I'm concerned that Katrina was a mark of something that died in New Orleans. I'm not convinced, as Lolis is, that the culture is fully back as it once was. It seems to me that when you have this kind of exodus of people, the front porch culture, as we used to call it, is gone. Meaning what made New Orleans special wasn't just you can go to Snug Harbor or go to, you know, hit a bowling lanes and hear some great music or walk around the French Quarter and hear music. It was that it was in these poor neighborhoods, you could hear music in the streets. You would feel the kind of street culture going on. I drive those neighborhoods, and they're empty. You feel the void. Architecture is not the city. The city is its people. And when we have hundreds of thousands of people to want to get back here, that's part of the soul gone. Now, that doesn't mean New Orleans won't recreate itself. We have a large Latino population coming in here. You might start having jazz and hip-hop mixed with Latino fusion. There might be a whole new New Orleans music scene. But I worry that we're headed to a sliver by the river that does adult entertainment, casinos, and celebrates jazz in a museum, not jazz on the front porch.
Martha Carr, what about it? The Reconstruction Czar, as he's called, Mr. Blakely, he's got a plan, but is it a plan that really recreates New Orleans? Is that still the goal? Or is it sort of, let's lay out some support lines and see what grows here? It may be entirely different, may be smaller for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no doubt that with a population half of its former size that we won't be recreating New Orleans as it was anytime soon. I think what's so compelling about Dr. Blakely's proposal is that it for the first time signals to residents areas that the research is showing could be viable places for reinvestment. And in essence, I think ultimately part of his goal is to lure residents out of neighborhoods that look like a jack-o'-lantern, as they say, where they're very...
A lot of wide open space, and then a house or two, and then a devastation again.
Exactly. And try it through a lot of incentives and land swaps and things to recreate whole neighborhoods. And I think only through a very holistic approach to neighborhoods are we going to have a viable city again. If we live in a sea of blight, all of these social problems that we've battled for a long time are only going to get worse, and we will ultimately be a failed city.
We've got callers from New Orleans, and I want to turn to them. Joe is on the line. Hi, Joe. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to say that it seems to me that the panel is merging both the long-term question as well as the short-term question. The long-term problem being, you know, restoration of the marshland, et cetera. And, of course, that's federal, and that is going to take Congress, just perhaps Congress more so than the president, to take care of. Short-term, the storm just exposed the underbelly of New Orleans, which had grave problems for many years. And when we talk about restoring New Orleans as it was, perhaps it shouldn't be restored as it was, because you had a very large underclass, undereducated population that would work in very low-paying jobs. It seems to me that as a New Orleanian, and I'm in my 60s, so I've been around for a long time, It's been a failure of local and state leadership. You have to take care of the crime problem in the schools. If I were a poor person from the lower ninth ward going off to Dallas, I would not come back because I would have greater economic opportunity in Dallas and my children would learn something.
Joe, let me ask you about that. I seem to recall, was it Barbara Bush, an offhand comment somewhere saying maybe the public housing shouldn't come back or finally we'll get rid of that, you know, rat's nest or whatever it was she said about the public housing in New Orleans. Is that the attitude you're expressing here? Hurricane Katrina is a kind of a broom to sweep out social problems and somebody else can deal with them.
I'm trying to look forward rather than look backward. For instance, a lot of the rebuilding in New Orleans that's being done so far has been done by Mexican laborers. If people have moved out of New Orleans and found better economic opportunity, that's wonderful for them. I think we should be just looking forward in terms of establishing, you know, a safe city and a city with a good school system.
We hear that, Joe. We hear it loud and clear. Let me put it to Lois, Eric, Eli. Lois, how about it? Maybe a different city? Fine, bring it on.
I tell you, people have had a range of experiences when they've left here. A lot of folks have indeed done better, and I agree that those people should not come back if they're doing better where they are. I think it's a myth to suggest that these other cities have been just all good for all New Orleanians. A lot of New Orleanians have been in those other cities, felt stranded, felt homesick, felt unable to find jobs. Additionally, the kinds of issues he talks about face urban America all around. So to suggest that by having these people leave New Orleans, we will then make a better city here and they will do better elsewhere is simply to misread what's going on in the rest of the country.
But does that see Hurricane Katrina as a kind of fire hose washing away the underclass and left with a different profile?
Well, the truth is Hurricane Katrina was not that. I'll give you a couple of examples. Mm. First of all, New Orleans has always been very racially and very economically integrated. Mm. Any neighborhood you go to, you walk five or six blocks and the whole complexion changes. So there are a whole lot of poor people whose homes were not destroyed. Mm-hmm. Everybody did not live in the lower ninth ward.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, a lot of the people, if you're going to be poor somewhere, you'd far rather be poor in a city you know than in a city you don't know. So a whole lot of the people coming back are poor people. One of the problems that the school systems have faced is that they're even high school kids coming back without their parents. And so even if you would say it would be good for the Hurricane Katrina to have washed all this away, the bottom line is that it didn't. We still have these issues to deal with, and we can't avoid them.
Let me get another call from New Orleans. Nathan is on the line. Hi, Nathan. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Very well. What do you see, Nathan?
Well, I moved down to New Orleans in June of 2006 to do the AmeriCorps program, and I was serving in one of the poorest neighborhoods of the city, Tulane Gravier. I was working for Phoenix of New Orleans, and we were doing gutting and rebuilding. Now I'm working to set up a charter school called New Orleans College Prep Charter School, and I've met hundreds of the young people who have come down to New Orleans who have a dedication towards public service and have made a real calling from New Orleans, and they're really excited about what they can do and what they can bring to the city. And
are you hopeful for the city, Nathan? Are they hopeful for it?
I think we are really excited about, I mean, this feels like our Freedom Summer. This is our 1965, that there's a real sense of urgency and there's also a real understanding that we can make an immediate impact. And there's a lot of AmeriCorps people, there's a lot of Teach for America people, and there's a lot of young professionals who are doing really great work.
Mm. So you're in it up to your elbows and feeling the excitement that comes with that. Nathan, thanks for that call. Douglas Brinkley, there have been a lot of volunteers through here, a river that keeps on flowing. Over on the Gulf Coast, I've been part of it just this week, and you see the excitement that people bring when they come. They want to respond, as you say, to what's happened here. And it's very moving to see these interactions sometimes. Is there a fire of hope in that? It's not government. It's, you know, sort of people to people, as they used to say. But is that a fire sufficient to the challenge?
Well, I don't know if it's sufficient for the challenge, but it sure is nice. Mm. It feels good to see so many people. And I've been talking to college students. Yesterday I was in the Lower Ninth, a group of high school kids from Detroit that came down to try to help out with the church down here. And then A couple days before that, I spoke to a group from Columbia University that came down for a week. Spring break, more people were coming to New Orleans than Daytona Beach.
Right, right.
And
I've been in a bunkhouse full of 50 men and another one right next, 50 women all week just working their hands off.
Well, and when I talk to them, they're also saying, gosh, we gutted a few houses. We helped a couple people. Is that enough? Mm-hmm. I'm only here for a week or 2 weeks. The answer is yes, it's enough. And go home and write your congressman and talk about Katrina on campus and be our ambassadors out there. And when that moment comes in our culture, which will occur in 2008 presidential debates, let's have these candidates hear your voice that you want to try to help New Orleans come back. And the caller was right. It's not just President Bush. The Democratic Congress right now has an obligation too. So we're doing pretty well of keeping this story alive, our needs alive. And everybody who comes down here really does give a helping hand. And as just somebody who lives here, I really appreciate all these people that come down.
And maybe part of a national commitment to the city and region that they lay their own hands on to work with. Let's take a call from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Charlie's on the line. Hi, Charlie. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I'd like to start by just thanking you for doing this show and just really bringing it back to the forefront.
We're glad to do it.
My aunt is right in the middle of a purchase agreement to sell a home that she's been in for the last 15 years, and it kind of breaks my heart that they're moving to Houston.
But, out of New Orleans, Charlie, or where?
Yeah, out of New Orleans.
Mm-hmm. Why are they leaving?
Why? Because my uncle found a better job opportunities in Houston, and I think he's a little bit upset with the city itself, frustrated on the same level that a lot of people are frustrated, like they feel like they're not getting the amount of emotional or, you know, not even the monetary support, but just all the things that you've been discussing, the structure of the city and you know, people paying attention to, you know, the more tourist areas as opposed to the city as a whole. But I do have a friend down there who, you know, moved back, and she made the big decision to go ahead and not only reopen her dance studio, but get back in and start a whole new dance studio with some of the small business money that was going around. And we held an event in New Orleans this past weekend, a dance workshop and seminar, just to bring people in from all over the country to make them aware of what's going on. And I think what I'd really like to say is that I hope that everybody on an individual level understands that the least that they can do is understand or just see the situation and go out into the world and talk to people about it and make them realize that, you know, everybody just needs a little bit of emotional support that's there.
We hear that again and again too, Charlie. Our time is short, but you catch it in a nutshell there. One family moving out, another committing in. Martha, what's your message to the country about New Orleans and the question the country needs to face here?
Well, I think one of the most powerful things going on right now is, you know, if you believe in people power, you can see it on the streets here every day. The power of the individual to change one house, one business, one life at a time. And this country and this democracy is built on the power of the people. I think that, you know, again, the private effort by the religious communities and the secular communities has been the success story of New Orleans. Forget the bungled government response.
And Doug Brinkley, if the government doesn't swing in behind that big response, what's won, what's lost? What's still at risk here?
Well, it's risk of losing a great American city. The risk is we become like Galveston, which was the largest city in the Gulf South in 1900. The hurricane hit, and everybody moved to Houston, which is now the fourth largest city. Galveston's become a bit of a historic toy town. That people would move to Baton Rouge, move other places, and New Orleans would shrink and become a two-industry town, port and tourism, and it would just be the sliver by the river, and weeds and grasses would grow in these neighborhoods that would be quite haunted.
And there are the stakes right there. We've seen just that choice on the streets all week long. I want to thank Douglas Brinkley of Tulane University, Lolis, Eric Eli of the Times-Picayune, and Martha Carr of the Times-Picayune. Great to have you all with us. Thanks for your hospitality. Thanks for being with us here in New Orleans. I'm Tom Ashbrook, direct from New Orleans. This is On Point.